I'm done with my publisher. I'm done with my record label. I'm ready to go independent, but I need to raise the money to pay for this new album. I can take those songs, those 10 songs, and I can auction off, let's say, just my ASCAP royalties, those $5,000 royalties from ASCAP, and someone will pay a certain multiple for that. So let's say I get 5 times what I earned last year. I've now got $25,000 for my new album.
That's Dee Dee Burns. I'm Steve Cleveland, and this is Sync Club. Dee Dee Burns, welcome to the club. Yeah, Dee Dee Burns, man, that is a great name. Like, you could do anything with a name like that. It's really good. It's memorable. It's
Yeah. It's easy to remember and simple. And it's funny because I have always been Dee Dee Burns. Like, most people don't just call me Dee Dee. It's full name, Dee Dee Burns.
Yeah, most people only get that treatment when they're in trouble. So.
Just like my kids.
Exactly. Yeah, my mom. I can hear my mom right now. Stephen Cleveland. So in a previous episode, the idea of auctioning off royalties came up.
Okay.
But before getting into the royalty exchange and how it works, tell us a little bit about your background and what led you into organized crime.
Well, I went to school to be a sound engineer, and my husband and I, after school, moved to New York City. And I decided that it would be too difficult to make good money as a sound engineer, and I got into the business side of music working at ASCAP. ASCAP's the Public Performance Royalty Collection Society in the United States. There's two others, BMI and CSEC. And I worked at ASCAP for almost 14 years. Had a stint at Warner Chappell Music Publishing in between there, but most of my career at ASCAP.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked very closely with songwriters. I knew a lot of their challenges. I heard from them often about needing advances and needing a big lump sum of money to do all sorts of things like buy a house, pay off their taxes. Maybe they had a new project coming, things like that.
Sure.
I decided to take a break from the music industry and move back to Colorado, which is where my family is from. And I happened to stumble across a job position at Royalty Exchange in Denver. And I thought, oh, that's weird. I didn't realize Royalty Exchange was based in Denver. And I had a little bit of background in what Royalty Exchange was because my team dealt with songwriters who worked with Royalty Exchange and were updating their catalog to assign to Royalty Exchange. So I took the opportunity to ask all of the questions I had about what Royalty Exchange was doing, and how I was concerned that it was not a fair funding platform for songwriters. I think you made a joke earlier about what we do here, but let me explain it in a way that, because I came to it with, this sounds like something that songwriters would not want to be doing.
Right.
Royalty Exchange, you feel me, right? What Royalty Exchange built was an online marketplace that allows songwriters to interact with investors in an open market. If a songwriter is going to get an advance, or they're going to sell their catalog to someone else, or they're trying to get a loan, they're going to one individual source to negotiate. Instead of what we have at Royalty Exchange, which is songwriters going to thousands of investors who want to get into the music royalty space to compete for that songwriter's catalog. And you're not having to spend a lot of time and energy and money with a lawyer to negotiate a deal that includes things like your copyrights or future work. Mm-hmm. What we do at Royalty Exchange is just an assignment of the royalty stream. So you're not assigning copyrights to an investor. You can do it for a 10-year term. You could do it for life of rights if you wanted to. But you're not having to assign everything, and it doesn't include future work. So if I had an album that did well and was earning on Spotify and its streaming, and say last year I made $5,000, but I am done with my publisher, I'm done with my record label. I'm ready to go independent, but I need to raise some money to pay for this new album. Mm-hmm. I can take that, those songs, those 10 songs, and I can auction off, let's say, just my ASCAP royalties, those $5,000 royalties from ASCAP. And someone will pay a certain multiple for that. So let's say I get five times what I earned last year. I've now got $25,000 for my new album. I didn't go into debt. I decided to do it just for 10 years. So I get that the royalty stream back in 10 years.
Right.
And I've got a new album. So now I'm being able to generate revenue with my new album as well.
Sure. I can appreciate like an artist wanting to do that, but maybe you can, I don't want to stop you. You seem like you're in a roll, but I do have some questions. So
yeah, do it.
Well, I guess what would be a typical artist that would approach Royalty Exchange? And is it just the artists, or is it, I mean, who's making these decisions? Because I was looking at your website and there's some pretty big names on there that seem to be engaging this type of, what would you call it?
I would call it a funding platform.
Okay.
It's a way to raise money out.
Very good.
Yeah. So the kinds of people, it really runs the gamut when it comes down to it. We have independent artists who have come to us who are earning maybe just $1,000 to $2,000 in the last year, to major label artists who are earning, $50,000 in the last year, to hundreds of thousands of dollars in the last year. It really does depend. We work with other people who are getting royalties, so producers, some managers who've been assigned a royalty right, songwriters, artists. We've done other things that are not music related as well. So trademark royalties for Cherry Garcia ice cream and all sorts of any royalty stream really we can work with.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so the thing that's exciting about it and what has really amazed me is that investors actually want to participate, really want music royalties.
Huh.
There is so much money out there that's not even in the music industry. So think about it. If you're going to your publisher to get an advance, you're getting money that's already in the music industry that's just churning through in that industry. But if you're going to an investor outside of the music industry, that's actually added revenue into the industry that wouldn't otherwise be there. So it really does help the industry itself grow by bringing in that outside funding. Because music royalties are not tied to what's going on with the stock market, and because streaming is growing, because so many people have access to music these days, investors really want to take some of their portfolios and put it into music royalties. But before something like Royalty Exchange, they didn't really have an avenue for getting involved in it.
What kind of return does an investor typically see, or range maybe?
That's a really good question, and it really does run the gamut. We've done some analysis. Now, we've been analyzing these things for the last 2 years. Royalty Exchange in its current format has been around for 3 years. But previous to a year ago, the royalty streams themselves were assigned directly to the investor. So once a catalog was sold, Royalty Exchange didn't have any purview into what the royalties performed like after that. We now administer the royalties for investors. One, it helps us to answer investor questions. It also ensures that ASCAP and BMI and the music publishers that we work with aren't getting questions from, the hundreds of investors on our platform. They're getting those questions from Royalty Exchange if there are any.
Mm-hmm.
So we've only got about a year and a half's worth of data to really analyze for that. So nothing published yet on what our returns yet are. What I will say is investors have to make a decision about how much they're going to pay, and they're competing with one another. So there are times where an investor might be so excited about a piece of music because it's something that is meaningful to them. I'm going to use an example of this father who bought this song that we had on our platform that his daughter and soon-to-be son-in-law had gotten engaged to. And so he paid a large amount for that. And that was just because it had sentimental value to him. So there was a higher price point on that one because of the sentimental value.
Huh. That's pretty extreme.
And think about a piece of artwork too. You see art auctions and some things like that go far over what the value would be, but because it's a meaningful piece to a collector, it goes for a much higher price.
Sure. You know, the eye or the ear of the beholder in this case.
Yeah, exactly.
So you kind of had an example earlier of like an indie artist that maybe had like $1,000 and from their PRO from the previous year.
Yeah.
And how do you determine what the multiple will be that it sells for, the rights?
So we won't determine it. We let the investors on our platform determine it. What we do is we'll take a look at the catalog. We'll determine a few things. How old is the catalog? Has it been earning for 2 years or has it been earning for 10 years? If it's been earning for 10 years, we can say, let's start this auction out a little at a higher price, because if it's been earning for 10 years, there's likelihood it will continue to earn for the next 10 years. If it's newer, it's 2 years, it's probably on a decline of earnings. So we might start that at a lower multiple.
Mm-hmm.
Then we put that auction up live with that starting price. We give some information about the music that's included in that catalog and then some financial information. So what did it earn last year? Where is it earning from? So is it Spotify, Apple? Is it heavy on radio or is it mostly film and television? And what countries is it earning from? And we put that information and then our investors will come review that and then place a bid. And the bidding goes on for 3 days, so investors will compete with one another to drive up that price for several days.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've had auctions that have, you know, had 10 bids. We've had auctions that have had 60 bids. It just depends on what the competition is like for that particular catalog.
Is there a typical profile of an investor? I mean, I think you mentioned earlier it was people that are kind of hedging against stocks and that kind of thing. Are these professional investors or are these music people or just fans? I mean,
yeah, I think a good majority of our investors are like that. We have some funds, we have some private investors, we have another group of people that are in the music industry themselves who are building just a fund of music royalties for themselves. So it does kind of run between all of the investor groups there.
Okay.
But mostly people not tied to the music industry, though we do have some of them that participate.
It's fascinating. I really never thought of music royalties being a commodity, I guess.
Right.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. And it's something that I think there's just so much heart and soul that goes into writing a song. And doing something like selling that thing feels uncomfortable, I think, for songwriters. And it has historically been kind of a taboo thing to do. But you're just leveraging this thing that earns money so that you can create new stuff. And it's just a smart way to earn some money, get a lump sum of money that you can grow instead of getting a loan that maybe has a really high interest rate. And some banks have difficulty understanding the royalty flows,
mm-hmm.
how royalties flow. There are some banks, especially in Nashville and Los Angeles, like City National Bank or US Alliance, that can do loans on music royalties because they understand the business, but it's going to be a smaller amount than you could get, say, in an auction. There
right.
are other advanced companies out there, but when you do the math, and I think a lot of people don't do the math because we've had to get a lot of people out of these types of deals, they're being charged close to 41% interest rate. And I'm not joking.
That's incredible.
It is, yes. And if it had to be written on a piece of paper on the agreement that they signed, you know, an artist would never sign that. But they just don't realize what's being hidden in those long documents. And that's the other thing I just love about the way things are structured at Royalty Exchange, is that our agreements are all 3 pages or less. They're really simple to understand. While you should, you know, obviously anytime you sign something, you should have a lawyer review it. But
right.
being able to understand what you're signing is such a difficult thing for artists because there's so much legalese in these publishing agreements. I mean, you get a publishing agreement that's 30 pages long. You have no idea what you're signing. And sometimes even a sync license can be really long. So you have to be careful that you understand exactly what's included when you sign something.
I mean, you should be able to understand it. It should make sense. A lot of these things are just so one-sided, and they're, you know, 30 pages long because they're really going out and protecting their interests. And I can appreciate that, but there's always like that pressure to sign it too. You know, here it's now or never, and you don't really have a good understanding. But with a simpler contract that's 3 pages long, that makes a lot of sense. I can appreciate that. That's a really nice way to conduct business, I think.
Yeah. And it's consistent across all the deals that we do. So we don't add in special things to our agreement for the investor or for the seller. It's really just about building a short, simple agreement that both parties can understand, but can't negotiate against each other. Mm-hmm. This is the way it works, and this is the way it works for everyone on our platform. And it just becomes a much more fair and transparent marketplace.
Gotcha. So if I were to ask you, maybe for like a scenario where we have, let's say, an independent artist and they find a placement for a song, but they've auctioned off the royalties, just so that that everybody who's listening can maybe get an idea of how's the money split up. Let's say they just sell their ASCAP royalties. Could you kind of walk us through like an example? You know, you can use round numbers. Doesn't have to be real.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great question. And a really important part of understanding what you're doing when you are getting syncs and what happens afterwards. So if you've auctioned off your ASCAP royalties, say, for a song, and that song you get a sync for, you get $1,000 from your sync, that is not included in what ASCAP is collecting. Those syncs, either you're collecting directly because you're self-published, or your publisher is negotiating that and then gives you your interest in it. So you've got that $1,000 and the investor does not.
Mm-hmm.
What your investor will get because of that sync is anytime that TV show or film that you got it placed in airs on television, if it airs overseas on television, or if it's in a cinema overseas, those royalties are going to flow through ASCAP. So your investor will be getting those. So we have a lot of people who have a sync heavy catalog. So they're getting a lot of sync placements. They're getting a lot of those lump sums of money when they get a sync placement. And they want to hold on to that because those are large amounts of money. Where the performance royalties, those are smaller amounts of money that are, you know, maybe you're getting $10 every time it plays.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're, you know, getting $2 every time it plays. And while those add up, it takes a lot longer for you to get that $10,000 that maybe you got from the first sync.
Sure, sure. No, I think that's the attraction for a lot of artists that are interested in sync is that, you know, there's the potential for large payouts.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's nice that the artist can hold on to the money from the placement.
Yep.
And then the investor benefits from the song being in the movie or television show.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's very fascinating. Could you possibly, is there more things that you can talk to about sync? If you have any thoughts or opinions, I'd like to hear those too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, let me just share outside of Royalty Exchange, which is from putting my ASCAP hat back on, but public performance side, is when you are signing a sync agreement, there's sometimes some options to do direct licensing for your public performance. And that means that you're not going to be collecting for those television or film royalties that happen in the future. So you might get a higher price point immediately, but you won't get any back end from ASCAP because you've done what's a direct performance license. You have to weigh the decision about the show that you're doing. You know, do you want to allow that? Do you want to be able to collect some back end, or do you want to get a little bit higher of a sync license up front.
Now, this is interesting because this is kind of a term that I'm not completely familiar with. So it's called a direct
licensing.
Licensing. Okay. And now who would that be with the person who's placing, like?
Yeah. So the production company will be driving whoever's placing the music and telling them you need to direct license this, or, you know, and those are things that can be negotiated as part of your sync. It's super important. And I always advise people not to include direct license simply because you just have no idea what's going to happen with that show. If it goes into syndication, if it's a huge hit, you know, and you're getting played every day on USA or something, that's a lot of revenue. Mm-hmm. If it gets overseas and it's played every day in some country, I mean, that's a lot of revenue you're missing out on. So you just have to weigh the value of the premium they'll put on a drug license, if any. Sometimes there isn't even that much more of a premium in the upfront fee than what you would get collecting from your...
maybe I can ask a question. So in the event that somebody does offer you and you accept a direct licensing deal, that just basically means that they are not paying ASCAP for the song?
That's right. So they're not paying ASCAP for the song when it airs on television, or Netflix is another example. So every time that Netflix reports performances to ASCAP for that particular program, for your song, you're not going to get paid by ASCAP. It will be notated on the cue sheet, which has all the song that was in the film. It will be notated on the cue sheet as a direct license. And so ASCAP or BMI CSAC won't pay those out.
That's really, you know, useful, helpful information, because I probably have seen it. Like, I've read so many books recently. It probably just, like, all these terms kind of smear together. It's like, but that's a really good tip.
Yeah.
So in your opinion, if you can avoid it, avoid it.
Yeah. Yeah. And most people in the industry will say the same thing. I hear it a lot, to avoid it if you can, but you know, you've got to weigh the values there too. So you always have to make your own decision, but go in and make sure that you know whether or not there's a direct license or there's not. You know, and after you've gotten that sync license, especially if you have excluded a direct license, so you're going to be getting your public performance royalties from ASCAP, make sure the song is registered, that it's 100% accurate. Most of the cue sheets that production companies create, they have some sort of access to all of the songs that are registered at the performing rights organizations in the United States. So if that information is all accurate, it's super easy for your production company to generate an accurate cue sheet so that when ASCAP processes the performances of that film, they're paying the right people on the song. Not only that, but that cue sheet in the U.S. gets shared with all the performing rights organizations outside the United States. So if that cue sheet is wrong from the get-go, you may have a real difficult time ever collecting your royalties from overseas or even in the U.S. So
like when you register the song with your PRO, you want to make sure that everything is exact. And I also saw something, and maybe since you've worked for ASCAP for 14 years, that you can answer this question. Is it true that if you're even like a fraction of a percent off on the way that you're splitting up your song, that can prevent you from getting any type of royalties distributed at all for that song?
Well, they will try to resolve it. Like if you try to register a song, it's all online these days. So it has to be 100%. All the songwriters on the work and all the publishers, it has to add up to 100%. If it's below or if it's above, it's going to not even let you submit the registration. So there are some nice technology checks along the way. But let's say I register the song and I've listed myself as songwriter at 75% and I listed you at 25%, but then you registered it and you said, no, I get 75% and Dee Dee, you only get 25%. Those are two things. Those are conflicting, right?
Yeah.
The shares don't match. And that's where things go into what we would call a counterclaim or a dispute. And I know the performance organizations do make a lot of effort to resolve those disputes, but the idea is that as a songwriter, you really got to take responsibility at the upfront of who you're working with to get those splits settled at the very beginning and register them correctly, and that everyone is registering the shares exactly the same so they can live together.
So, okay. So maybe we can go back to a question that would maybe include the royalty exchange here. And I think it would probably be in the interest of the investor, but
yeah.
Do you guys verify cue sheets? I mean, or how would an independent artist verify that the cue sheet is being submitted correctly?
Yeah, that's a great question. So at ASCAP, the really nice thing about ASCAP is that anytime your song is included on a cue sheet, it shows up in your ASCAP account. I'm not sure if BMI has that online access yet. I know they were working on it at some point. And CSAC, I don't think, has cue sheet access either. But, you know, if you have ASCAP, if you're ASCAP, you're set, you can see that online. Or your production company can also provide it to you. So as a writer, if you want to request it, just reach out to the person you worked with on the sync or to the production company of the program and request a copy of the cue sheet. There's a lot of composers who get copies of their own cue sheets, and it's a great way just to make sure that everything is accurate.
Sure. No, I think that's a reasonable thing to ask for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when an artist assigns their royalties to an investor, does that somehow fall off of their PRO sheet, or is it still there and it's just noted?
Yeah.
How does that get split up, just out of curiosity?
That's a great question. So that's all a private transaction that is underneath the ownership of the song. Because remember, as a songwriter, you still own that. Right. You still own the copyright. So my name, Dee Dee Burns, remains on the song that I wrote. In the background, all that I have done is I've added a direction to pay a third party, and that's the third party investor. So it happens after the royalties are already calculated at the performing rights organizations that they pay that out. And I, as a songwriter, remain listed as a songwriter publicly.
And that's done at the PRO, where you can direct to have a third party paid?
Uh-huh. That's right. Yep.
Okay.
And publishers and labels, every kind of royalty distributor that we work with, whether that's sound recording royalties or whether it's composition royalties, but that's kind of all how it's managed publicly. And as the owner, it's still the original songwriter or artist. And it's just in the background when the royalties are processed that they're assigned to a third party.
That's easy then.
Yeah.
You know, and you always have to assume, like, I'm not the first person to do this, but where do I start? Oh, my God. Just so many things to know.
There are. One thing that Royalty Exchange has done, and this is a free service, and this is for everybody and anybody who's earning royalties from the performing rights organization. Right now we're working with ASCAP and BMI, where I hope to be working with CSAC shortly. Is you can attach your ASCAP account to a royalty exchange account and just get an analysis of your catalog. What we call it is know your worth. Songwriters may not be paying attention to where all their earnings are coming from, but if they get the opportunity to get a clear report, they can make some really smart business decisions. In that report, we give like the top five songs, we give the top five countries, and we say where most of your earnings are coming from. Are you earning mostly streaming? Are you earning mostly film and television? And the advantage of that is that it gives songwriters the ability to say, hey, I'm earning in Japan. I didn't realize I had so much going on in Japan. I know this producer there. This is an opportunity for me to engage with my fans who are listening to my music in Japan by working with another artist in Japan or wherever it may be. And they can see what they earned in the last year. They can see what they've earned overall and maybe even highlight some things in there that like, wait a second, I haven't gotten paid for that one song. And then they can address that with ASCAP or BMI and say, you know, I'm missing these payments. And it's a really easy analysis. It's a free service. You just go to royaltyexchange.com and set up an account. It's I don't know if you're familiar with Mint.com, but what we're building is the ability for songwriters to attach all of the accounts where they're earning royalties and be able to analyze them, you know, every day just to get real-time information about where their royalties are coming from.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a summary, and I'm happy after this, so you can include it in show notes. I'll give you the link, but it's worth.royaltyexchange.com. It's just an analysis of the royalties that you've been earning from your performing rights organization. We recently added Sony, and you're not selling your royalties or anything. This is just a tool for you to understand where your royalties are coming from.
Well, that's great. I mean, it gives people kind of a lay of the land of what they're making. And I think a lot of artists are like, they don't want to know the business end of it. You know, and this is all just really business stuff. And it's really, if you make good decisions here and you understand where your money's coming from, it can help you expand your artistry.
Yep, absolutely.
And so this is great information. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to share, or did I miss anything?
Yeah, well, just one more thing on that last comment that you made about it being a business is one thing that I've always encouraged songwriters that I've been working with is to treat your music as a small business. You are an entrepreneur. You're building a new business. And it's important to ensure that you're paying attention to the business side, that you understand what things you're signing, that you know where your money's coming from. But the thing is how do you balance that out with the creative part of your life? So one thing I always encourage artists to do is on your calendar, set aside 2 to 3 hours a week that is in the morning when you're not feeling creative or some other time in the day where you're not usually making music, and set that time apart to focus on the business side and really ensure that you're crossing your T's and dotting your I's and getting paid when you should.
Right. No, I think that's great advice. It's really easy just to get like in this space where all you want to do is write songs. But I think taking that extra time and designating it when you're not feeling creative is super good advice.
Yep.
Hopefully Royalty Exchange will be able to help many more artists. And I would encourage everybody to go check out the site. It's not what you think it is. And read the about page. It really does point out like how it was kind of real shady dealings in the past, and how this really is shedding light on the process and making it very transparent.
Yep. It really does. It gives you a great idea about the ethos of the way we approach things at Royalty Exchange. So.
All right. Well, Dee Dee, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We will add those links in the show notes. And
all right. Awesome.
Hey, this is Steve Cleveland, and you've been listening to Sync Club. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to know more, check us out over at syncclubpodcast.com. Thanks for the hang. We'll see you here next week at the club.